The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness, even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness. All
aboard! Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 65. I'm Victor Nuno, one of your co-hosts here, and with me is Peter Harling. How you doing, Pete?
Hey, Victor. I'm good, man. I'm good. Report 65. It feels like we've been doing this together for a lot more than 65 reports, buddy.
Yeah, what, are you tired of me already?
No, it just feels like I thought we would have had more under our belt when I stopped to think about it. But yeah, 65 is a good number.
Yeah, well, it's try to do one a week. And we started, a little over a year ago. So it's about right. Yeah, something like that.
We're on that 2-year itch, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, we're not quite to that 7-year itch. Give me a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to start our dive into the organizational ranks. We did this exercise a couple months ago, but there was other cool stuff to talk about, U18s and the draft and all that stuff. So we kind of put this on hold, but now it's time to kind of look back. We're going to start with some of the worst teams ranked 32 to 28 and not go over everything, but we're going to talk about some of the kind of outliers, maybe some of that are different, not necessarily Pete and I, although some of them where we are different, but sometimes where you and I were different from the rest of the team as well, because we have everybody's rank. So that'll be kind of the plan. How does that sound?
Better. Let's get at her.
All right. This episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcasts. And you can use our DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. We're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It is completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host a draft pick trading, treasury option, and so much more. Use our promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. All right. So we did this exercise and many thanks to Jesse, my Fantasy Hockey Life co-host, who helped collate a lot of this data because you were trying to do this all paper and pen, Pete, and we refused to let you do that.
Thanks. This is much prettier.
Yeah, there's some color coding and all that. Although next year we'll make it even easier with some drop-down menus, but anyways, we did all this, and thanks to Jesse for helping to organize it, but we'll start at the bottom, and the absolute worst prospect system is the Tampa Bay Lightning, or at least I should say it was, because they did make a trade. They had some draft picks. It might still be the worst, though, Pete, because they have not a whole lot of great stuff, but let's talk about the first guy that we want to talk about, and that's Ethan Gauthier.
Yeah, so Ethan Gauthier scored an average of 5.6. And I suppose we should do a little qualification context explanation here, Victor. So we had a number of people contribute to our rankings. Dauber, all the editors at Dauber Prospects, Pat Quinn, Curtis Rhines, Aaron Itovich, Ben Gerrels, Hayden Sobolewski, Puneet Sharma, Mark Allen, yourself and myself. So all the senior writers at Dauber Prospects. And for each team, we had everyone rank their top 15 prospects and give them a score, each player, an individual score of anywhere between 1 and 10. I think only one player got a 10 from anybody, and that was Connor Bedard. I think everybody scored him a 10. And then you work your way down to a 1, and that's like, this is not someone who should be on anybody's fantasy radar. And then in the middle, a 5 would be someone who I would say, and I hope everyone else who scored these had the same mentality as my instructions were, that person is like a 50-50 chance of realizing the NHL and playing a decent number, you know, like 60 games in the NHL, having a shot at it. So anything less than a 5 is they're less and less and more unlikely to make the NHL. And anything above a 5 is their certainty level grows. And when you get up into the 7, 8, 9 range, not only are certain to make the NHL, now we're grading what their upside could be. Like, you know, you go from being an NHLer to a top 6 to a star player to a franchise superstar player. So keep that scale in mind as we talk about these ratings, I'd say. So the first guy you said we want to talk about was Ethan Gauthier, who ranked 3rd behind Isaac Howard and Hugo Alnefelt. And Ethan Gauthier's ranking overall was a 5.6. So just slightly above 50-50 to make it to the NHL. I ranked him a 7. Victor, you ranked him as a 5. I guess obviously I was a little bit higher on Ethan Gauthier. And not to say that I'm super high on him, but a lot of that 7, I think, goes to the fact that he's on Tampa Bay. And with such a lack of depth and competition, I think he's a third round pick by Tampa Bay. So he's got a little bit of draft pedigree backing him up as well. That elevates his ranking, I think. Tampa Bay is also kind of struggling with the cap. They're giving players away at trade deadline and off seasons to try and be cap compliant and to keep some of their more superstar players. So a 7, I agree, might be a little bit generous based on his stats, because they kind of flatlined from last season from his previous year. You know, they were kind of identical, and you like to see progression. You like to see players in junior as they get a year older and more experience and more comfortable. They go to an NHL development and prospect and training camp, that they'd go back to junior and that they would improve their offensive production. But, you know, taking a little bit of context here, he did change teams. He was playing for Sherbrooke, and then he moved to Drummondville. Drummondville was a much better team. They won the league championship. So, you know, he wasn't the guy anymore. There were some other players there that were able to, you know, support and provide offense. And so there's different ways, different angles you could look at that. But, you know, he at least maintained his level of production year over year. But then as the playoffs hit, his production really spiked at the end of the year. So he ended the season on a high note. So that's kind of my take of my analysis of Ethan Gauthier. Ethan Gauthier. Victor, what's behind your 5?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said some of it, and maybe it's just a slight interpretation. I kind of don't mind where the average is, you know, somewhere between 5 and 6 is kind of where I'm thinking of him. And I personally try not to think too much about the system, because even though he may be one of the few bright spots in this system, that doesn't mean he's going to play for the Tampa Bay Lightning. He could get traded. He could go to Carolina and just be lost in that system, or Montreal or Anaheim. And then he's just one small piece in a big pool. So yeah. I try not to worry too much about that. Although you're right, if he does, and if he's the lone, you know, top guy, then that for sure helps him. You're also right. I agree that the stagnation of the point increase wasn't great, although the playoff performance was really good. So, you know, you kind of try to look at those two, but, you know, mostly his PNHLE is kind of in the mid 50s. One thing I do like is I'm looking at my FHL player card, and he has really solid peripheral coverage in terms of the hits, blocks, shots, and PIM. So if you're in a bangers league, Ethan Gauthier is going to give you a really solid peripheral floor, even if he ends up not scoring that many points. So he could be like a 50 to 60 point guy, but have really massive peripheral coverage. And so that could be really, really good for you if you care about that sort of thing. So I like that. And, you know, he certainly seems like he's tracking to get a good crack at the NHL. So it's just a matter. I think my low score is just more skeptical on how high the points is going to be, more than anything.
Yeah, I, you know, he's fantasy relevant, and in deep dynasty leagues, he should be rostered. In shallower leagues that, you know, less than 20 teams or less than 20 prospect rosters, maybe not so much. I'm sure you could find a better upside or a higher reliability or a quicker turnaround prospect you could roster that you'd feel better about. Someone like Connor Geeky.
Connor Geeky, he's not on Tampa, is he, Pete?
In fact, he is now. Yeah, he was recently acquired in a, via trade. So he automatically becomes their number one prospect, I'm sure. Checking notes. Yes, he would be a 7.2 and Isaac Howard was a 6.7. So that makes him top dog in the Tampa Bay system. So he wasn't there when we did our rankings, of course, but he would be if we did them now.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this feeling about Connor Geeky basically since his draft season, that he looks like a very, very good junior player. I'm just not sure how well the points are going to transfer to the NHL because he's very big. His skating is a little wonky, but he gets around okay. You know, the question is just how high is that upside? And is he going to be able to realize it? And to me, he just kind of feels more like a middle sixer, you know, someone who can play with some physicality. He can, you know, I mean, you can just look at his brother, actually, Morgan Geeky, who I think he has more upside than his brother for sure. But it's like how much past that? He's kind of like a middle six guy who isn't too relevant in fantasy. So I think Connor can be a little bit more than that, but it's still question of how well he's going to be able to produce in the NHL. His hockey or his fantasy hockey life player card shows that he shoots and hits and blocks a fair amount too. So there is a nice peripheral floor there, but I wonder if they just don't end up using him more as a matchup center, you know, kind of like Anthony Cirelli type, although I'm not sure he'll be that good defensively. And so that's not as exciting in terms of offense, but I do think that he's someone who is very likely to play. You know, he's someone that you should be excited about. And we've seen players that with less skill, I would say, really thrive in that Tampa system, playing with really great players, although it's thinning out more and more lately. So that's less likely or harder to do. But I still kind of feel like he's not as much guaranteed top six, more middle six, which, you know, still could be second line with pretty reasonable opportunity in production. And with the peripheral floor Geeky has, you know, I think that there's certainly some excitement there. I'm not up to a seven where you are, Pete.
Yeah, I'm more confident in the seven for Geeky than I am for Gauthier. You know, he'll fit in well with Tampa Bay. They play a rough and tumble sort of style of game. I don't see him cracking the top six necessarily. I think he's got the highest upside between the two Geeky brothers. You know, I think he's going to make a really nice third line center for them, sort of like a Charlie Coyle kind of player, and you'd be able to slide him up in a pinch when you've got an injury or whatever. So he's a little bit versatile that way. I think you've got some upside there. So certainly fantasy relevant at the very least. And now he's Tampa's top prospect. You know, you ranked him as six, I ranked him as seven. I think we're pretty on the same page there. So the next team we can talk about that has about as many exciting prospects is the New York Islanders. They added a couple guys at the draft that I think are interesting, and Cole Iserman and Jesse Pulkkinen, who was just signed today. But before that, we did our rankings, so we'll talk about the guys that were there before, at least one of them. William Dufour, I think, maybe might be the guy we want to talk about here, Victor. He scored an average of six. He was number one on the team in rankings. I ranked him a seven. You were much more shy with your ranking. So this was the final year in his junior, and it was, you know, 50 plus goals and 100 plus points. That's, last time I checked, that's pretty good. First year in the American Hockey League was solid. He had 48 points in 69 games, you know, so that was nice. You know, we like to see players hit the ground running when they graduate from junior to the American Hockey League, and he certainly did that. However, good feeling gone, last season, his sophomore year in the American Hockey League, his production dropped to 25 points in 55 games. And, you know, I compared the two rosters, and his rookie season, Bridgeport had a couple veterans there that you know, led the team in scoring and carried the mail, and they were lost. And last season, they went with some of the younger guys. And obviously, I guess William DeFore's role increased. And that's a red flag that he wasn't able to step up to the plate and deliver at least the same sort of production he did as a rookie. Now, it's a concerning trend for sure. I don't have the proper context to explain that. There might have been an injury there. I don't know if they had a coaching change as well, where, you know, his role was significantly reduced or whatnot. I wish I had those answers, but I don't. So we'll just have to wait and see, I guess, and hope he bounces back and, returns to the positive direction trend. So I guess my seven has an asterisk, but we'll see. It could go from a seven this year to a three next year. You just might be ahead of the curve, Victor. What'd you score him?
Yeah, I had him as a three, which might be aggressively pessimistic on DeFore, because, yeah, he definitely looks good in some ways, depending on how you look at it. He had, as you mentioned, the good scoring in junior, but I'm always really skeptical of some of this high scoring in the queue. I just think it's an easier league to score in. Most of the equivalency models kind of show that out. And he really only had that one really big season for St. John in his final season before turning pro. Before that, it was pretty modest production, and part of that was affected by COVID. So a lot of caveats there. But yeah, I think that that's a big part of my concern with DeFore. A lot of his underlying metrics in Bridgeport this year looked pretty poor as well. So I also don't know exactly what happened in the previous season, but it didn't look like he was, not only was he not scoring, but it didn't look like he was doing so much away from the puck in terms of being able to drive play. In fact, his transition game, his play driving, his pucks to the middle, his high danger chances in the AHL this season were all awful, just awful. So I don't think it was just the case that he was getting unlucky. He was not really generating a lot. And so, maybe it was just the context of the team around him. I'm not sure, but I'm just skeptical of him. I also think he's the kind of player that needs the right support. So in the right NHL role, he could really thrive as a bigger guy who isn't super fast and has a really good shot, but he has to kind of fit that specific role. So I'd be a little concerned with that, because I feel like with DeFore, a lot of things have to go right for him to kind of reach his fantasy upside. And that's why I'm a bit more skeptical on him.
It's a pretty abysmal prospect pool. He's the top prospect. And after that, it's Ruslan Ishikov, Samuel Bolduc, Danny Nelson, Cali Odelius, Matt Maggio, Alex Jeffries, Justin Gill. A bunch of who the heck are they guys? So, I mean, the Islanders, I think they're in a real rough spot. They drafted some players early this summer in Vegas, guys that have bust potential, quite frankly, with Jesse Pulkkinen, who was an overage player, and Ed Cole Iserman, who we talked plenty about and have gone at length about his bust potential. And then the Islanders just don't have a really good track record of developing prospects either. So, they've got a lot of players on the roster that are on the wrong side of 30 and have long-term mega contracts. So they're really putting themselves in a situation where the future is looking kind of bleak for them. And it's not like, we're talking about Tampa, who has two Stanley Cup banners recently added to their stadium. And then the next team that we're going to talk about just won the Stanley Cup as well, and their second trip to the finals. So while their prospect pool might be kind of shallow as well, they're still feeling good about themselves. So the Islanders, that's the one thing that's different between the Islanders and all the other teams we're going to talk about today, is the lack of recent success or potential future success. So let's move on from the lowly Islanders. They're down. We kicked them. Stop it. They're dead already.
Stop! He's already dead.
So let's talk about the Florida Panthers. Victor, the first guy I want to talk about is someone who I didn't have rated at all. You ranked him a 5, which is a little bit above the average of 4.5. So it looks like I'm the odd man out here. He was ranked number 12 on the team overall. And that is, Ludvig Janssen. He's a 20-year-old defenseman that had 0 goals and 3 points in 50 SHL games last season. He's only a fourth round draft pick So, you know, it's not like he's got a lot of draft pedigree. He's 20 years old now. So I'm not sure if he's even signed and planning on coming over to North America this season. I'm out of the loop on Ludvig Jonsson. Why don't you tell me a little bit about him, please?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that is fully substantiated, but it seems like the average was around there. So maybe I'm not completely off from some of the other rankers, but yeah, he definitely got a much higher score for me than you. And yeah, I think part of it is just that he's playing in a really tough top league as a relatively young player. So he was 20 most of the season. He is a really good mobile right shot defenseman. I don't know that he has a ton of offense. I mean, he did have some production in the junior level, the J20 level. He seems to be able to produce really well at. But as he's gone up in the level, he hasn't really been able to really keep that up. So I guess what I'm saying is maybe I need to reconsider that rank a little bit, because I'm not sure that I would feel the same if I redid it right now. But sometimes you do get caught up into this issue where you're looking at how bad the system is and you're like, oh, you know, maybe there's some opportunity here, or maybe this prospect is a little bit better. I do like Ludvig as, if you're just looking at it in terms of, does this guy have a chance to play? That's probably what the ranking is based on. But does he have a chance to play and put up a decent amount of points? No, I don't think so.
Right. I'm looking at his elite prospects page here, and he's not signed yet with Florida. So he'll be back in the SHL this season. He did score really well through World Juniors too, 10 points in 7 games for Sweden. So that's not nothing. You're right. My 5.5 overall ranking of him, or 4.5, that's not accurate. It was 2.5. So he was about not ranked by about half of the contributors, and ranked around 2 by anyone who did rank him. So perhaps not fantasy relevant yet. Maybe a watch list guy. Put him on your watch list. See what he does this year. If he signs at the end of the season, comes over and has a cup of coffee in the American Hockey League or the NHL as a 21-year-old, it's possible. So let's talk about the next guy from Florida. We'll do 2 from Florida. Grayson Sochin is a player who I was a little bit keen on in his draft year. I'm not going to lie. He gained some traction late in the season in his draft year, and started getting a little bit of buzz. Anyways, his average score now for Florida was 2.2. He ranked number 4 on the team. I ranked him as a 5. And this might be sort of similar to what we were talking about with DeFore. He had a really good production at the junior level. Not sure how well that's going to translate to the pro level, although he came from the dub, not the Q. So that, you know, gives me a little bit more confidence. And it helps that the Panzers are also pretty thin in the prospect department. But he's a player I could see, you know, turning pro, playing in the American Hockey League, having a, you know, a 20-point season as a rookie, which is not great, but not terrible. But ultimately, I could see him being beat out for roster positions by players that Florida signs as free agents out of Europe or the NCAA, maybe. So I ranked him a 5. You ranked him a 5. Other ranks had a little bit higher. There's some 6s and a 7 in there. What's your take on Sochin?
Yeah, I agree. As someone that I really liked, you know, and watching him last season, you know, if you read the tea leaves correctly, you could kind of see a world where this was going to be really good for Sochin, right? Because he was playing on the Seattle Thunderbirds. He had a kind of more limited role. He was playing kind of third line minutes, but he was really good. I mean, he was scoring a point per game based on his very limited ice time. You thinking, okay, well, next season when he gets more ice time, he's someone who could really pop off. I mean, he could get closer to 1.5 points per game, or maybe even closer to 2 points per game. Like, you could see this massive draft plus 1 improvement coming, but that's not what happened. He did get more ice time, but it ended up not translating, and he ended up getting moved actually partway through the season to the Edmonton Oil Kings. So that may have been part of it, but he just barely ended up beating his point per game pace. So that was kind of disappointing. But I also think that Sochin, you know, he's just one of these guys that I think is going to end up being a better real life player than a fantasy guy. And I do think my ranking for Sochin, and maybe yours too, is more based on that. I think he's someone who can play in a bottom 6 role, but I don't know that he's really going to dictate a top 6 role or have that much scoring upside. So, you know, that's kind of the issue with Sachin. I think he's someone that we like, but it's like, okay, how much is the upside? Because you look at a lot of his underlying, I'm looking at his FHL player card, and a lot of his play driving, his puck work, and a lot of his underlyings look really, really good, but that doesn't really translate to scoring a ton, although his assists are pretty high. And he also doesn't really have a peripheral floor to speak of. So you're kind of just hoping that the playmaking, the assists translate, but I think he's going to be end up used more of a shutdown role, which is, you know, kind of like what I mentioned a little bit about Geeky, although I think Geeky is a much higher prospect than Sachin. So yeah, I'm not really sure where people are getting the sevens from. Maybe they're thinking there's still more offense to be uncovered there, but I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, I'd look elsewhere for options to fill up my roster with prospects than Sachin. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours. All right, so that's the Florida Panthers. So Mackey Samoskevich was their top prospect as a 7.3. Jack Devine, Justin Sertif, Josh Davies, Mike Benning. That rounds out the top like five or so. So it gets pretty thin after that. You got some swings with Ryan McAllister, Alexi Hapaniemi, Sandis Vilmanis. Vilmanis is trending up a little bit. But yeah, it gets a little sketch after that. So let's move on from Florida. And next up would be the Edmonton Oilers, the Stanley Cup runner-ups. Their prospect pool is pretty thin too, but you know, that's okay. They got some pretty good roster players right now. Olivier Rodrigue, he scored a 4.7. He's the sixth ranked prospect on the team. You and I both were kind of similar, 4 and 3. Some other people had him a little bit higher though, as high as a 6 and a 5. So we both seem a little cool on Rodrigue compared to some of our peers. You know, for me, he's 24 years old now, so tick-tock. But his play in the American Hockey League has improved, albeit slowly, but he is getting better and better each season as he plays. And, you know, the Oilers purged themselves of the Jack Campbell contract recently, so him out of the way should help. It eliminate competition for starts for him in the American Hockey League. And, you know, you've got Skinner and Picard on the roster. Both have 2 years remaining on their contracts, but you know that he'll be most likely the guy who gets called up if there's an injury or something. But yeah, it looks like, you know, at 24 years old, if he's got to wait 2 years, he'll be 26 when he gets an opportunity to play full time, unless something else changes with career ending injuries or a trade. So overall, I'm just, you know, I don't really like the opportunity he has, and he's not screaming, I deserve to be in the National Hockey League. You know, he's not like Jesper Wallstat, where he's just going to force his way into the league. He's just playing good in the American Hockey League. And I think he'd be fine at the NHL level, probably as a backup, but not really as a starter. That's kind of the way I see Rodrigue, Victor. So hence the 4. You ranked him a 3, so you're probably thinking that I'm sugarcoating this slightly.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. But I mean, I think overall, I'm glad you said those things that you said, because I have other things to say. I mean, I think the thing is I'm not sure if he's in this position if he's not the son of the Edmonton Oilers goalie coach. And that's a big factor here. And I've talked to some goalie experts who, you know, scratched their head a bit. You know, if you go back to that 2018 draft when he was drafted, here are some names of guys that went after Rodrigue. He was the second goalie taken, by the way. So Justus Annanen, who looks like he'll be the competing for starts in Colorado. Jakub Skerek, who knows, in the Islander system. Lukasz Dostal went 3 picks after him. He's a stud. Joel Hofer, he's looking pretty good. Ivan Prosvetov, he's, you know, certainly serviceable. Mitchell Gibson has been a backup. Akira Schmid, who has been good and looks like he compete for starts in Vegas. Samuel Ersson, we see him in a starting role. Magnus Crona has had a few NHL games with the Sharks. Kevin Mandelis just got traded today to Colorado as we speak. And then there's a couple guys a little bit lower down the list, but that's a lot of names to have relevance after the guy you took with a second round pick and the second goalie off the board. It seemed like a reach then. It has kind of seemed even more like a reach since then, especially when you see guys like Dostal do what they do. And yeah, he's been okay in the AHL. They have a pretty good AHL team, so I don't know if that's partially just, you know, the team in front of him. He has, if you look at, you know, his expected versus his actual goals, he's been okay. You know, he's not like blowing the doors off. But yeah, I just don't think that I think the Oilers, the fact that he's really the only one in their system with any legitimate shot at being even a timeshare NHL goalie it's not so much a compliment to him as it is a failure of the Edmonton system to surround their pool with a little bit more talent. And the fact that they, as we're recording this, we just saw Xavier Bourgault get traded, who was one of their top skater prospects. He was the guy they traded back from at 20th overall when they had Jesper Wallstedt staring them in the face, and they could have drafted their future starting goalie for the next decade at an extreme positional need, and they blew it. They totally blew it. And I'm sorry, Oilers fans, for bringing this up again, because I know a lot of you would have wanted that, but it's just even more obvious today on the day that they trade the skater that they basically were fine with trading back for, which just seems like a crazy move because you have clearly an awesome talent in goal with Wallstedt. I mean, everyone was saying, how is he still here at 20th? And they just kind of blew it on him. And I don't know if because they felt good about where Rodrigue was, and I don't know how much nepotism plays into that, but it just seems kind of wild, you know? And I don't think that he's really someone that's going to have much of a future in the NHL, frankly. I think if he was in any other system, he wouldn't be very relevant at all. So that's my thought on Rodrigue. I'm not super excited at all.
Well, I don't know how much of a reach it was at the time, because he had a really good career in the queue and made the Canadian World Junior roster. I don't think he played many games for Canada, but he made the roster. And I'm looking at where he was ranked in his draft rankings, and he was the number one North American goalie in Central Scouting. I think all the goalies you talked about who you could have had instead were almost all Europeans. I don't remember any North Americans in there. But he was ranked as high as 49 by Bob McKenzie. So that's ahead of where he was drafted. So McKenzie had him ranked higher. And that is ranked according to NHL scouts, not Bob watching games. McKean's had him at 65, which is right about where he was selected. And Future Considerations had the foresight to rank him 101st. So, you know, I there's a little bit of a revisionist hindsight history there in your statement, but I think your comment about goalie coach is very interesting. I wasn't aware of that. That is interesting.
Yeah, Hofer was the one Canadian right in that mix. Doesn't seem like he was rated as high, but all these, I mean, goalies are hard to figure out. He certainly was getting the opportunity. I don't know if at the time, I don't know if that was related to anything or not, but it's also, it's more like what they've done since then, which is not much, you know, to bolster their goalie ranks. That's kind of been the most head scratching thing. It's kind of like, oh, we got our guy, we're good. You know, even though they're not, like, thank goodness Tua Skinner has really worked out because he's been great. But other than that, like, they haven't really been able to do much in that department. So that's kind of disappointing. But anyways, I just think that if you're looking for goalie prospects, I wouldn't look at this and say, oh, he's the heir apparent and he's going to be great. I wouldn't look at this that way personally, even though it's tempting to.
Right. And other Edmonton Oilers, so Holloway was their top ranked prospect. And I think, you know, we've seen him emerge as a regular NHLer now. We scored him as overall as a 7. I think he's made the team. Xavier Beauregard was number 2, and I'm pretty sure they just traded him to Ottawa. Philip Broberg, also now graduated. Raphael Lavoie, Bo Akey, Rodrigue, and then it thins out pretty hard after this. You got Matvei Petrov, Maxim Berzagin, Tyler Tulio, Carter Savoy. Interesting, they also acquired his brother Matt Savoy from Buffalo in a favorable transaction, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. A lot of people had a lot of thoughts on that. And I mean, my take was this was perfectly reasonable. You know, I think Ryan McLeod is a really good player. And I think people are a little overexcited about Matt Savoy, but I think that he certainly is clearly now the top. I kind of consider Dylan Holloway a bit graduated. So I think Savoy is kind of the top prospect now in the system. And it's just great for him because he gets tons more opportunity. That Buffalo system, there were a lot of guys that kind of looked like him, kind of smaller, really crafty, really skilled, you know, but right. don't necessarily have the size and the physicality. So there were a lot of guys that kind of looked like him, and Jack Benson already kind of passed him on the depth chart. So it was seeming like it was going to be difficult for him, but he comes to Edmonton now and it's just like clear sailing to at least an opportunity. Right now he has to make something of it, but he has the opportunity now.
That's right. All right. So moving on, we're doing the countdown. We're at team number, the 28th ranked team, the Colorado Avalanche, another team that's got some Stanley Cup pedigree behind them recently, but their prospect pool is pretty thin too. One player I think we should start with is Nikolai Kovalenko. So he scored about an average of 6.5. He's the fourth ranked on the team prior to the draft. I scored him as a 6. You scored him as a 4. Both of us were low compared to some of the other folks who scored him 7 and 8. I think those are pretty generous. So what he is he's a player coming over from the KHL. So he's 24 years old now or close to that. 24, yeah. Okay, so he's had some really good seasons in the KHL. He scored very well, but we've seen plenty of guys come over from the KHL, and some of them are hits and some of them are misses. So we'll see which one Kovalenko turns out to be. He had an injury at the last season, I believe. He came over and had a cup of coffee in the American Hockey League. He'll be a full-time North American player this year. So he played in 3 games with Colorado Eagles and had 4 points in those games. So that's pretty great. I'm not sure if Colorado was playoff bound or not. You always got to take those handful of games at the end of the season in the American Hockey League with a huge grain of salt, because some teams are in, some teams are out, and you know, they just play the kids and give them all kinds of ice time and don't worry about the defense's lapses because it doesn't matter. You know, we've seen a lot of guys come out of college and have 3 or 4 games in the American Hockey League and be a point of game player and then score 3 or 4 points the entire season the following year. I think, though, that Kovalenko is going to contend for an NHL roster spot with the Avalanche to start the season, and he could play full time in the NHL next year. So in terms of European import players coming over to, you know, the NHL this season, I think he's got to be the top dog out of all of them. So I got him as a 6, Victor. You got him as a 4. You're a little cooler on him. Is that because of the age?
Yeah, part of it. I mean, what you said is very true. These guys, they come over and, you know, we've seen plenty of misses, way more misses than we have hits. And so you have to be a little skeptical of that. He certainly, I don't disagree at all. He's going to have the opportunity and it's going to be a great opportunity and he will. You know, we'll see if he'll be able to capitalize on it. So I like that for him. I think some people rank, my feeling is some people rank too heavily on opportunity, because that's just one factor and it's an important factor, because without a good opportunity, it's kind of hard to make your mark, you know, but there's certainly more to it than that, right? And they have to have the skill to be able to translate that. So that's a bit of my concern. You know, obviously, we'll have to wait and see if he's going to be able to put that up. But I'm trying to remember, because I remember looking at this at the time and I remember thinking that there was an issue potentially with his shooting percentage, but I don't remember if that was the case, or maybe I'm thinking of someone else. So I think actually he was okay with that, but I'm just not sure if he's going to be able to translate that scoring in terms of what he did in the KHL. And he did have a lot of assists and not as many goals. And he basically only had 2 seasons where he was really, you know, someone who was getting a lot of points. So aside from that, it wasn't like he wasn't a huge scorer. I will say though, that I'm looking at some of his numbers now, and he definitely had more primary assists than he had secondary assists in the KHL. So that's good in terms of him setting up more points. But I guess I'm just a little bit more skeptical that he's going to be able to come over and actually have a massive impact for the Colorado Avalanche. We have seen their top six thin out a little bit more in recent years, but I think that there's still, there's no guaranteed spot there. Now, part of that depends on what happens with Nichushkin, who, you know, who knows what's going to happen when there may be a wide open spot there if he's not rejoining the team. And it seems like there's a couple of incidents now, and I'm not sure, you know, he's been in the player assistance a few times now, so there's no guarantee that he's going to be able to come back full force. So I like the opportunity for Kovalenko. I'm just kind of skeptical that he's going to be able to really put it all together for a huge season. I'm looking at the ranks, so I'm clearly the low one. I'm four, and then most people are much higher than you even, Pete, at 6.5 average. So maybe I just don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, there's a little bit of a hype train behind him. Here's the thing, though. They've got 12 forwards under contract already, right? McKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog, Nichushkin, Mittelstadt, Arturi Lehkonen, Colton Ross, Jonathan Drouin, Miles Wood, Logan O'Connor, Parker Kelly, and Joel Kiviranta. So it's not like those, some of those guys are impossible to beat out. And as you pointed out, Nichushkin could very well just remove himself from the equation. And I'm not sure about Landeskog's health. So there's some potential there. And then his competition coming from the prospect pool, Callum Ritchie, I don't think he's quite ready yet. Matt Steinberg, and then guy. So, you know, we'll see. I think he's got to be a top six winger, or he's not playing the right role on your team. So there's a lot of potential here, but nothing certain. And, you know, if he gets buried in the American Hockey League for a year, then he'll be 25 the following season. And, like, you know, that's a little old for a prospect, a little late to be making the cut. So we'll see what we get with Nikolai Kovalenko. Another prospect, actually, who might be able to give him a little bit of competition for a position if one becomes available. And this is all, of course, recorded mid-July. They could sign some free agents or make some trades between now and then. But I'm talking about Oscar Olsson. He scored an average of just under five. I scored him just over that, five, and you scored him a little under at three. You know, not a lot to get too excited about. He does have first round draft pedigree. They picked him in the first round, and his points per game went up in the American Hockey League. And it's as a rookie, he scored 0.32 points per game. And last season, he moved the needle up to 0.51 as a sophomore. So he's trending up. There's no question about that. It's just, does the needle register on the fantasy radar at this point? I think that's a fair question. I think he's a really good example of a five rank. You know, I kind of laid out the potential opportunity that we could see in Colorado. And he's a guy that's been in their system for a few years. He's under contract. He's paid his dues in the American Hockey League with two full seasons. You know, I kind of like him having the opportunity to get a, and then once they hand him the ball, does he run with it or is it a big old fumble? Victor, you ranked him as a three. That just reeks of fumble. Give me your thoughts on Oscar Olsson, please.
Yeah, well, I mean, he has trended down in terms of his projected, depending on, you know, which side you look at. He just had a very strange development arc. I think that's part of it. I mean, he developed in Sweden, and then he came over to the OHL for his draft plus one season. So that was kind of a strange move. He came to North America. I guess it's not so strange. It's nice to have them kind of closer. But he went from playing in the SHL and Hockey Svenskan to being in the OHL, which is, you know, a huge step down. And you would expect someone like that to just absolutely dominate. And he definitely did not. You know, he was good internationally for Sweden. And then he went from that underwhelming OHL season to his first AHL season. And it was like you pointed out, it was kind of meh, you know, not super great. And then he's kind of improved that since. But, you know, he's still young enough where I think that kind of matters. He's 21.5 points per game is decent. I mean, I agree with you that there is still an opportunity there. And if he makes something of it, he could kind of push his way into the top six. I'm just not banking on it. I think he's just more of a good complementary middle to bottom six player. And so that's that's hence my rank. I think that he still has some opportunity. I mean, he still has the ability to get a little bit higher, but I'm not putting my money there. I think Callum Ritchie, as we all kind of agreed, is a much, much better. And they have a couple other guys that I think are decent. I'm not there with Olsson. I think I'm the one who kind of dragged him down to, well, me and Aaron actually had him quite low. The rest of you had him a little bit higher.
Yeah, no one had Callum Ritchie lower than a 7. I think everyone is unanimously thinking that he's got far more upside. I think he's just a little further away. You know, like Olsson's in striking distance of an NHL roster, and I think Ritchie needs a little bit more development. I mean, the next couple of guys on the list were Mikhail Guliaev and Sean Behrens, who scored 7 and 6.6, couple defensemen, and Kovalenko, who we talked about, then Justus Annunen, then Oscar Olsson comes in next. Jean-Luc Foudy, one of the Foudy brothers, was just signed as a free agent. It might have been Jean-Luc, I'm not sure. Sam Malinsky, Ivan Prosvetov, and Sample Ranta round out the next couple of guys. So as you can see, it thins out pretty hard. There's a couple guys further down on their depth chart that, you know, I'm a little curious about. Trent Miner, Ivan, just for the name. Mm-hmm. A couple guys there that might be interesting, but all in all, the Colorado prospect pool it's got about two or three guys that are over a 5, and after that, it's pretty questionable. So that is the bottom 5 of the Dauber Prospects organizational rankings. As Victor mentioned at the top of the show, these rankings came out several months ago, but we just had more time-sensitive topics to discuss in terms of trade deadline and playoffs and tournaments and the draft. So we really wanted to focus on those things, and the organizational rankings were not as time-sensitive. So if you missed them a while ago, they're all on the site, Dauber Prospects. And in order to find them, you just want to hit the top bar at the top and hit columns and feature stories, and you just got to backtrack a little bit. They all came out like May, I think they were, Victor. They came out April.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it was May, April, May.
Yeah, right around there. So each team has a write up, so you can kind of see what we're talking about. And the podcast is going to go a little deeper than the articles went, but it's a great little section. It was a great little read, and it was really good prep homework for the prospect report, which is out now too. So something cool there to check out. So that's it for this episode. Report 65. 64 will be the next couple of teams working our way up to the more exciting pools. There's some hidden gems in these lower teams though. So we'll see you next week, everyone. For feedback on the show, if you want to chat with us, our socials are at @DPR_show, @Farling, @VictorNuno12. And @Sabarin91. And we're also part of the HockeyPodNet. So go ahead and follow them on socials as well. And you know, wherever you're listening to the podcast, we'd appreciate the like, subscribe, 5-star review, share an episode on Twitter, repost it. That'd be nice. Until then, everybody, thanks for listening. Keep your stick on the ice.
Don't! Let's do that hockey.